720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase studio on... Well, I keep thinking of today as being New Year's Day. Of course, it was New Year's Day, but now it is the day after New Year's Day. But, we're well into it at this point, 2016, and glad to be with you. John Hansen was going to be here, but he has... I think he's got the flu, got one of those bugs. A lot of people have that. If you listen to some of your favorite broadcast people, they're talking without their voices, or maybe, I think there's some things going around as far as some stomach flu. So happy to be at least well, tired, but well for you. And I know that typically I think this is Matt Bubala's normal shift. Everybody's kind of moving around over the last couple weeks. So happy to have you here, 720 WGN. So 312-981-7200 to add to the program today. Some of the things, the common themes you guys can chime in with is, of course, your resolutions. We're going to share ours. I'm going to share mine. Roger Badish is going to share his again. And I think his, and of course, Joey in the booth, Joey Gelman's going to be with us until 5 a.m. as well. But so Roger, one of the resolutions that I'm sure, if there's a short list, would be to maintain the wardrobe that you had on, the very famous wardrobe you had on yesterday. What was that?
That was Baby New Year.
Looking good.
Come too. On, Baby New Year had to make an appearance.
No. I thought it was good because Halloween, right? That's a kind of a dress up thing.
Well, I dressed up for Halloween too.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. What were you for Halloween?
I was one of the killer bees from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That is a good one. So now, are you, of course, the listeners can't. I can see just the top half though, and most of what was exciting about what you were wearing last night was the bottom half. So do you have
that? It's all home already. It's all home stored away. Baby New Year will make an appearance next year, I'm sure.
Okay.
So I had the sash. You got to have the sash.
Got to.
Right. Had a top hat, which fit very nice. I spent some time on that at the costume store. Some of the ones, that kind of just pinch into the tip top of your head.
Yeah.
I hate those. This one was really nice, and it fit good. I might even wear it out some night.
Nice.
And then I had the large dorm room size diaper with...
Why do you say dorm room? You mean large enough for everyone in the dorm?
Well, large enough for me because I put on just a tad too much weight over the last year or so.
Okay.
And
none of your other diapers would fit? None of your childhood diapers?
No, those are way too small. I haven't been that weighed in, 60-aught years. So it had one of these very large diaper pins. Which didn't exactly hold on too well. The thing kept wanting to unpin, and who wants to lose their diaper on New Year's Eve?
Right.
So I made an appearance with Steve and Johnny and everyone last night, but I had to get down there early because I had to do news and stuff up here. So we made a real quick appearance, and now they had told me several weeks before that they were going to have someone there as Father Time, and I don't think that worked out because I didn't see anyone else dressed in a costume. It's kind of like, hey, come to a party. We're all dressing up and you misunderstand what they say.
Right.
Yeah, right. But it was fun. I have a history of doing this. When I was teaching, I would always try to find a costume that would help the kids kind of get into whatever new unit we were doing. Studying Alibaba and the 40 Thieves. And so I dressed up as a genie. And I even had a little magic lantern that I put a miniature speaker in and had it hooked up, wired to an MP3 player where I had audio cuts of Robin Williams from Aladdin.
Wow.
Saying stuff. So I would, as the students would come in, I'd have them rub the lamp and play the little audio. And so we had fun doing that. So I love dressing up in costumes and doing that kind of stuff. So I enjoyed it.
Well, we love seeing it. Of course, later on, throughout the course of the program, you've got a few hours if you want to, follow in the footsteps of Cher and do multiple costume changes from the news desk. That would always be welcome. 312-981-7200. People can chime in with their resolutions. If they dressed up like something, they could certainly share that As well. Also, your thoughts on Chicago Rising, or Chi-Town Rising.
Don't get me started.
As they call it. We have a good vantage point. So many of the pictures we saw, I know the thing was, I think they've already got it dismantled. But what did people think about that? And you can definitely text in 312-981-7200 or certainly call in with your thoughts while it's still fresh. Roger, your thoughts? Did you, what did you, I mean, it's interesting that we're doing something. And at the end of the program, when we were on New Year's Eve, we mentioned some of the other. So it's definitely a step up of the possum in a box drop from a convenience store they've been doing in South Carolina.
Yeah, definitely. It first of all, it got great ratings on TV. It was the number one rated program for that time. It even beat out one of the traditional TV New Year's Eve broadcasts. I don't know if it was because of, oh, wow, this is really cool, or what the heck is this?
Right.
You know, we're not sure why. We had a clear view, obviously, from the studios, the Allstate Showcase studios on the first floor. Perfect view of the whole thing. I think it was in the wrong place. Even when several weeks ago when I drove by and I saw them putting the star together, I'm thinking, why are they putting it on Wacker Drive if... if you want to step back and take a picture, you're going to fall in the river. So why would they put it in such a confined space, then charge for it to get into that confined space, and everyone then realizing that they're not charging for attendance on the other side of the river? So, I mean, planning, you know, was kind of out the window. I thought the star looked great. I was up here working the news desk and getting some recordings and stuff done and everything for the newscast. So I didn't see the actual live performance of the star, but I heard from a lot of people that they shot off the fireworks too early, so you couldn't see it actually hit the top, that whoever was keeping the stopwatch on the thing needed new batteries in their stopwatch because the star was slow. And it was already past midnight by about 10 seconds by the time it got there. And that they shut the thing off way too early.
What do you mean shut it off?
They shut off the star after like maybe 5-10 minutes of it being lit.
You know,
and people were still down there. Thousands of people were here.
Rome wasn't built in a day, and an entire new tradition wasn't built in one afternoon.
That's true.
But so you think, though, they'll do it again?
Definitely. Are you kidding? Okay. Sure. Sure. And the fact that they got stations around the country to carry the broadcast, I think they're going to try to outdo New York. But if they're going to do that, they have to find a bigger space where, I don't know. And again, they probably picked it because they thought it wouldn't disrupt traffic that much there.
And not knowing exactly how it was going to go. So good,
exactly.
So good to hear on that. We're going to check in with people on their thoughts, 312-981-7200, throughout the program. For tonight, we are going to talk about a bunch of different things, and these are things that John Hansen has put together along with Joey. So Blake Stubbs is going to join us a little bit later, maybe 2:30. He's the former movie critic at WMDB and one of the hosts at Roger Ebert's annual film festival in Champaign. So Blake Stubbs is going to join us, talk movies, and we're going to talk about our favorite movie heroes throughout history. We're also going to talk New Year's resolutions. We're going to also talk with Dr. Dan Ivankovic. He is one of CNN's most important people of the year. He's a musician. He's a physician. And we'll get more into all the things that he's doing. Plus tailgating. It's big today. Of course, college football, big day. So many big bowl games going on. And of course, Sunday, last one for the NFL coming up. Joey's a big tailgater. And we'll have Beth Peterson talking about elevated tailgating later on in the program as well. And when we come back from this break, this is a big thing. You got Uber, you got Lyft, you got cabs, and you got the surcharges that are going on, especially during some of these high traffic nights like New Year's. So stay tuned for that. We're going to have John Greenfield on from Streets Blog Chicago. And the reader, it's Dane Neal, in Until 5 on 720 WGN. Nice. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio. It is the 2nd of January. Still feels like January 1st to me. And for those people that maybe were out late last night, haven't even woke up yet. Maybe it still is New Year's Eve for them. And one of the best ways to get around, whether it's one of those holidays or whether it's just to get around in the city, is you've got Uber, you've got Lyft, definitely giving the cab companies a run for their money. In fact, maybe maybe too much of a run, but and usually I hear, you know, typically positive things, but I was not aware that there's a little bit of a controversy where people kind of woke up and realized they'd spent hundreds of dollars on Uber because of the surcharges. And the guy, on, you know, he's got his hand on the pulse of all of this stuff. He is the editor at Street Blog Chicago. He is a columnist over on the transportation side at the Chicago Reader. It's John Greenfield. John, welcome to WGN.
Good to be here, Dane.
So, John, I know that we were talking the other day a little bit about this whole thing. First off, let's get into some of the pros and cons and how it's related to the cab situation. So we've got Uber here, and it looks as though the cabs, you know, they're having a hard time keeping up and keeping those kind of ride sharing companies down. But I wanted to know a little bit before we get into the surcharge, as far as like Lyft and Uber, what are the differences? I'm not really clear on it.
Well, you know, when I consider about whether to use Lyft or Uber, you know, basically my preference is to use Lyft. It seems like a somewhat more ethical company. You know, at least I haven't heard anything bad about them, whereas Uber, you know, in some cities they've had kind of unethical business policies, like deliberately breaking laws. I heard in Portland, you know, the city government told them not to pick up people from airports, and the company was encouraging their drivers to do it anyway. The owner of the company just seems like kind of a jerk. He threatened journalists. He said,
"You don't want that."
Who, no, as a journalist, I don't want to get threatened. he was saying that if journalists went after Uber, he would go after them. He also said some sexist remarks. So just, you know, generally seems like a bad apple. But on the other hand, Uber is a larger company, so, you know, it's maybe easier to find rides with Uber. So, you know, I guess Lyft would be my first choice, but I would also use Uber if it seems like it's more likely that there's going to be a driver nearby.
Well, some of the things that people seem to like about the ride sharing is that you can, you know, I guess it's more of a pleasant experience, other than, of course, some of those news stories that we've heard where the drivers from some of those companies actually attack the people, right? And I'm not trying to say that maybe occasionally a cab driver doesn't attack somebody who's riding with him. But other than that, people seem to think that it's kind of a more pleasant thing. Maybe the car is a little bit better maintained. Maybe the cost is a little bit better. But then we had this situation on New Year's Eve with the surcharges, and it seems as though, and it must be in the fine print somewhere, but people were kind of shocked that that the bill was so high.
Yeah, I did hear about things where, you know, people are getting charged 9 times the usual rate. That seems pretty nuts. Really doesn't seem fair. And, you know, at the very least, they should really warn people about that up front. I mean, I haven't used rideshare during a surge period, so I don't know if something comes up automatically that notifies you. If that's the case, it was a problem. You have intoxicated passengers who aren't paying attention to that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's definitely not a good idea for them to be charging $200 for an 8-mile ride. I mean, that's not going to wind up with happy customers. I guess another way to look at it, though, is, you know, I'd much rather pay $800 for a ride than get a DUI or die in a car crash. So
I guess, yeah, most definitely. And so duly noted there. But is that one of the things, you know, as the cab companies, you know, with all of their kind of traditional situations and, you know, and years of either regulation or rules or laws or just policies put in place, is that one thing that they have on them, is that they're going to disclose that that just wouldn't happen. They're not going to charge $800.
Yeah, I mean, there's no surge pricing for cabs. So that was definitely an advantage of catching a cab on New Year's Eve instead of taking a ride share.
Now, for the surge pricing, do the drivers, you know, because we always hear the commercials, so I'm sure we play some of them here on WGN, maybe for Lyft, or maybe I've heard some of them on some other stations as well. Do the drivers get that, or is that something, because typically you make that transaction over your phone, right? You're not actually exchanging money with the Uber driver or the Lyft driver. So who gets that big surcharge?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, it seems like it would be really unfair if the drivers aren't getting a cut of the additional income, but I'm not certain about that. I'll have to look into it. But, you know, cabs and rideshare, at least at this point, play different roles. You know, the advantage of a cab is you can go out on the street, and if you're on a street the cabs go by regularly, you can just flag one down, you know, a little less premeditation than rideshare. But rideshare can be a very nice experience too. It is great to have the cab, to have the rideshare come directly to your door. All the times I've used rideshare, it only took a few minutes for the driver to show up. The drivers I've had for rideshare have been very nice. They haven't been talking on the telephone headsets, and they were pretty chatty in a good way. Last ride I took, the guy had free butterscotch candies he kept offering us. It's pretty pleasant. I mean, I've had some great cab drivers as well.
Right.
And it would be sad if, you know, that industry completely dies out. But they're definitely going to have to modernize and, learn to adapt to the changing technology. Mm-hmm. So one thing that's in the works is City Hall has put out a contract, request for proposals to create a universal ride-hailing app for Chicago taxis. So, if cab drivers can get in on more of the ride-hailing business, that would definitely level the playing field a little bit. But, I understand why cab drivers are disgruntled, because they do have a lot of disadvantages. Cab drivers, they have to get their vehicles inspected twice a year. They have to go through special cab driver training classes. They have to get drug tested. They have to get a chauffeur's license. So rideshare drivers don't have to go through all that red tape.
It seems like, there's a lot of restrictions. I don't want to say restrictions, but things, just extra hoops to jump through for the cab drivers. And it looks like one of those businesses that, and I think we talked about it the other day, like when I see Redbox, I think to myself, why didn't the Blockbuster people just realize that people would, that this is going to work and maybe this is the future and get on board and do this? And so when when Uber and Lyft just first started, I think everybody, because people would be apprehensive getting into a stranger's car and letting some stranger drive them wherever. I think it took a certain period of positive word of mouth, like people saying, hey, this really works, or I really like this, before it got to the point where they were comfortable. So as soon as that happened, I think the technology side makes a ton of sense. The cab drivers, even if they couldn't do it like completely company wide, they should have got on board with the technology and been a little bit more forward thinking and started doing some of those things.
The problem with the cab industry, at least in Chicago, is it's got a lot of inertia. It's an industry that's dominated by a handful of wealthier guys who own medallions. And they've just been pretty effective in lobbying getting aldermen to, keep the system in place. It's kind of like, it's very analogous to brick and mortar restaurants and food trucks. The old school businesses don't want competition. On the other hand, the medallion situation is a little sad in that, some independent cab drivers who have purchased medallions, these things cost like $150,000, $200,000, or they have in the past.
Yep.
And you got these guys, they're working class guys. They might have immigrated, and they are, paying off the loan for their medallion. And now their medallion is really losing value.
Right.
I've heard that medallion sales in Chicago have really dropped steeply. I think an article I saw about it recently said like there was only one medallion sold recently. And it was really below wasn't sold for much. So I think we're going to have some of these old school cab drivers who are going to, it's understandable that these guys are getting upset and they're marching around City Hall and things, because they're kind of viewing their trade as an endangered species.
Well, you could see it too. It's, you remember like the horse and buggy people were probably upset when the car showed up, and, at least initially they're like, well, this will never work. People love horses and buggies.
Uh-huh.
And then in the end it's like, geez, that kind of sucks. We better find something else to do. So hopefully some of those cab people can kind of transition, because it's still the same or a very similar job. And if it's just cheaper to do business that, and they still have that working knowledge of the city, or they just love driving people from point A to point B, they can do it. And so before we let you go, we want to make sure we get all the information how people can follow and catch up with you. It was exciting to talk with you about some of the things happening on Lakeshore Drive. And so people are going to look for that next week on WGN. But so where can people read you on a regular basis? Your hand is on the pulse of all things moving.
Sure. Well, I'm the editor of Streets Blog Chicago, which is a daily transportation news and advocacy website. My partner for that's a guy named Stephen Vance. He's a brilliant urban planning professional. With you know, one great thing about working with Stephen is he basically has a photographic memory, so he's excellent for stats and pulling up obscure information about transportation projects. And so we're at chi.streetsblogblog.org. And I also do a weekly column for the Chicago Reader. So that's a new endeavor I've been doing since we launched in early November, and that's been really fun joining the Reader crew.
Well, John Greenfield, we appreciate you coming on. Encourage people to see you at Streets Blog Chicago, and of course in the Reader for all things transportation. And then we'll be talking with you next week about the Lakeshore Drive situation. That is some pretty cool stuff too. And thanks for being on WGN. Thanks for staying up, and a happy New Year.
Hey, I just want to say one thing. You know, any listeners out there, if you're partying tonight, please don't drive drunk. I don't care whether you get a taxi or a rideshare, but just get home safely.
Nope. Sage advice, and happy New Year. Thanks, John, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks. It's Dane Neal in on 720 WGN. That's festive. Joey Gelman in the booth today. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio, 720 WGN. Until 5 a.m. today, as we get into 2016, it makes you kind of look back at 2015, think about what happened, what it was all about, and what kind of things you can either change or I guess, continue into 2016. So we're letting people, encouraging them to give us a call or a text at 312-981-7200 with their resolutions. What are they going to do for 2016? They can either find some camaraderie or inspire others to do something similar. I'm going to lose about 80 pounds.
What?
Well, okay.
You don't need to lose 80 pounds.
No, I know, but I'll only see this is that whole kind of aim one way and then you just fall short, right?
That's impressive.
Yeah. Then I'll only lose the 40 pounds. That would be good, right?
And you'll still be happy with that.
I'll be happy with that. Yeah. Well, on one side, I'm making realistic expectations.
Like, okay.
Geez, 80 pounds is crazy. but I'll shoot for that, and then I'll lose the 40 pounds. But then I'll have it all back by October so we can do it all again next year.
Yeah, I've got to – I don't know what I'm waiting for. I've gone through a lot of life changes over the past year. So my old way of going into losing weight is changed. So I've lost 70 pounds –
Wow.
Twice over the past, I want to say 10 years. And each time I've put it back, I have my own regimen. I have my own way of losing it. But with the cancer fight over the past year, with retiring and my whole lifestyle changing, with my wife's cancer this past year, our schedule and our focus, I don't know if it's the focus, maybe our abilities has changed. So I have to find another way. I have to revise my plan.
So that's your resolution, revising the plan, finding another way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because I'm okay with what I weigh now. I don't like it, but I don't know if I don't like it enough to
do anything about it.
Yeah, right now.
That's good. I mean, but that's kind of a comfortable place. It's like you can decide on your own time, figure it out, revise the plan, take some time. But I think just deciding to think about possibly revising the plan, I think, is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. When you said 80, it strikes to home because I need to lose at least 80.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be a part of that. Let's lose 80.
And it's going to take time because it didn't take overnight to get to this. And that's why I think a lot of people are unrealistic. They say, well, I'm going to lose 80 pounds, and I'm going to do it before summer. And yet they don't realize it took them 5 years to put the 80 pounds on.
Although, on the movie side, and stay tuned because we're going to have Blake Stubbs on, is like you hear those actors, they put on, I got to put on 80 pounds for this movie, or I've got to lose,
But that's all they do.
Right. So that's what you need.
You know?
Here's the thing, Roger, and this is a little bit of advice,
okay.
And you can do what you want, but I'm just saying become a movie star, then get roles that fit with your weight desires.
Oh, no. I have a face made for radio. That's no. You want to wait. See, the goal of movies is to have people come out to the movie to spend money to see you. Yeah, they'll be paying people to stay away if I was in a movie.
Those people staying away haven't seen the photos of Baby New Year.
Thank God.
Which I saw. Also, people calling in, texting in, 312-981-7200 with their thoughts on Chicago Rising.
Ooh.
One of the questions is, why the heck was Mario a host? Channel 7 was so much better. I recorded, of course, this is Janet Davies sending this in. I recorded and watched both. Did not make like the NBC host. Star is odd. You just got to get used to it.
Well, the reason why he was hosting was it was not just because Channel 5 had the TV rights for Chicago. It was not just a Chicago broadcast. This went around to, I think, about TV stations in maybe 10, 12 states.
Yeah, so it was not just Ryan Seacrest.
He was like the Ryan Seacrest. But you need to find... I know what they're saying. Find someone who's famous who's from Chicago. I mean, not...
Like David Arquette is he's the Grand Marshal of the Parade. I thought that was an odd choice. I get it. They're working here. You know, everybody likes, Slater from Saved by the Bell. So, he's popular. But this is it. These are the things we improve upon. It'll be part of that whole plan for next year. One of the things that millions of people have planned to do and many have actually succeeded and executed that plan is to see the new Star Wars and to see all the different movies. On the line with us now, we've got Blake Stubbs. He is he's a former movie critic with 1470 WMDB. He is the host at Eberfest in Champaign. So Roger Ebert, one of the few people that could take being a movie critic and turn it into, international and certainly national stardom. He is joining us, I think, from Peoria or something. So, Blake, welcome to WGN.
Hey, guys. Happy New Year. Glad to be here.
Happy New Year to you. And thanks so much for taking time out and joining our audience here in Chicago. So Roger Ebert is one of those guys. When you can be in whatever business you were, you can change it to a point where you kind of redefine what somebody working at the top level in that business is, what they mean to the country. I mean, he was Chicago's, but he was also America's, right? I mean, he was big everywhere.
Yeah. Absolutely. In fact, one of the films I'm going to talk about here soon, the guy who directed it, wrote and directed it, owes a lot of his career to Roger Ebert and the fact that Roger hosted a film festival every year in Champaign, which was, Roger's little hometown area. Also where I went to school, which is how I sort of became involved with that festival. He was just one of those guys where his words started to sort of resonate with audiences, not just those going to movies, but readers and newspapers. I mean, that's where they first came in contact with him. But he just sort of transcended the idea of a film critic and took it to the next level. And that's why he's one of my heroes. But he certainly, made it so that people going to the movies knew a little bit more what they were getting into every time they went. And you can't really find a lot of people who don't know who Roger Ebert is.
Well, Blake, that's one of the things that I wanted to ask, as somebody who is so impacted by him and carrying on and hosting the fest that he does in Champaign. What was it about him? Because movie critics, we've got so many, and now with kind of the advent of these different sites on the internet, almost everybody can kind of add their two cents. And so but it takes 400 people on Rotten Tomatoes to equal just one Roger Ebert. where you're like,
yeah, no, definitely. See, and actually, that's one of the things that I love with his festival in particular. What he was always able to pull off in Champaign was this great amalgam of critics would come to town, and they would take part in panels and the Q&As, and they would make sure, especially after Roger lost his ability to speak. These critics started taking the stage and handling the Q&As. And the whole thing was, I have people that I consider friends now that I discuss movies with, the moment I get out of a theater. And, the critics are just people like us, except, what they get to do is they get to, relay their thoughts to a wider audience. And Roger really sort of embraced the internet once he lost his ability to speak and found a whole new voice as a critic. So, I mean, we were just, sort of highlighting that whole him transcending being a film critic. He really took it to another level even again once he realized, look, I can't talk anymore. but there's nothing that says I can't type. And the fact I can type just gives me a whole new medium to really take hold. And he's inspired. There's at least probably five or six different critics that I only found online due to Roger Ebert sort of pointing me in that direction when they started to really sort of come into their own as critics.
Well, as
so,
a... I was going to say, as a critic, you know, we sort of enjoyed Roger for, you know, all the reasons, all the kind of practical reasons that you mm-hmm. know and love him for. Like, hey, does he think this movie is good? Is it worth my time? Is it worth my money? But but for him, what made him a star initially, at least got him on the scene, was something, again, another thing that you could never plan for. You could never write a script for is, you know, Gene Siskel, those two guys. Through the process of them typically disagreeing, but always mm-hmm. discussing, it just made, you know, Movie Review made really great theater. It made great television.
Right. The big thing, too, with especially with the dynamic that both he and Siskel had, for me, growing up watching them on television, was that I kind of felt like they were teaching me how to watch movies. And once I, you know, got into college, I started taking classes on film theory. And you know, they were referenced constantly because of what they did, you know, taking what were just words on paper that people would read about a movie and say, yeah, maybe I'll go see that this weekend. To then being on television and being in the living room every week, that just sort of, no one had ever really done that before. And the fact that they were able to communicate so well, and sometimes, you know, their dynamic, they didn't always agree. And it's known that they didn't always agree, but the mutual respect that they had for each other was what really made, you know, watching them every week sing to the public. And from then on, you know, they pretty much, I mean, they are the standard. And they always will be, I think, for a whole new era of either critics. And for me, like, I'm one of those people who, like, it's not what I do full time. It's a passion. And so what I love to tell people is, like, look, you're as much a critic as I am to some degree. But the thing is that I just, you know, I practically live in movie theaters.
Right.
So I have sort of like a more of a breadth than most average moviegoers do. And sometimes I, you know, being from Peoria, like, we don't get all the things that, you know, land in Chicago, New York, L.A. So I make road trips up to see stuff when I can. And part of that is, you know, my love of movies comes from guys like Ebert and Siskel. I mean, they're the ones that sort of just kind of ushered me in. And, you know, they didn't tell me how to butter my popcorn, but they definitely told me what to look for when I went in to see a movie. And my appraisals of it, I owe, you know, a lot of that taste that I developed over many years from being a teenager watching them growing up to then finally being like, no, I'm starting to mature as a moviegoer. And I think that people do that over time. And I think that's great. I think it's wonderful.
Well, we're thankful that you do spend so much time in the movies, and we're going to tap into some of that knowledge and some of that experience as we move forward in the program. We're going to take a really quick break now. And then when we come back, Blake Stubbs is going to talk. I want to get a little tiny bit of insight into what it is that you did learn from Roger Ebert, or what are the things that he did mm-hmm. so well that you try to use and convey to the people who enjoy your reviews as well. And then we're going to talk about some of these big movies, and some of these big movies that are coming out now are the biggest in history. And in every good movie, especially as we look towards 2016, you're looking for a hero. I just saw Ant-Man, so we'll talk about that tone. But
absolutely,
callers can definitely text in with their favorite movie hero throughout history. 312-981-7200. We have Blake Stubbs. We'll be back with him talking movies and 2016. It's Daniel in 720 WGN.
Cowboy
hero. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio. It feels like New Year's Day, but it's actually, it's the second, just the beginning of the second day of January. So we are a culture that absolutely loves their movies, passionate about their movies, and we are blessed to have on the line with a guy who is not only taking that, that love for the movies to the movies, but also then sharing that information with us. It's Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome back to WGN.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I wanted to get your thoughts. So many people influence not only on the viewer side, right, what movies to watch and where to go, but from a critic, like, what was it that he did that you said, yes, that is an important thing, and that is something I want to share with viewers as well?
Well, it's one of those. The key things that I always look for when I'm looking at what I think are like the best movies of the year, or what I think is going to be, you know, really recognized during awards season, because I think critical review sort of points audiences toward what's great, you know, and what to, I don't want to say avoid at the theaters, because in the end, you're going to see it if you want to see it or not. But the quality of a film, and quality usually leads to accolades. Accolades, you know, if you break down the criteria, for me, Roger and Gene used to talk about the cinematography of films quite a bit. Specifically, if you've ever watched Citizen Kane, for instance, which is arguably the greatest film of all time, and Roger has done extensive research on that film. He taught classes on that film, frame by frame. He did. There's a great audio commentary with Citizen Kane of Roger just walking you through the movie. And the cinematography, you know, how things are framed, why they shoot it that way, mise-en-scène, understanding the layers of what's in there. When they were doing their little back-and-forth banter, Roger and Gene could talk about that, and I could have just listened to a whole show talking about that. That was when I realized very early I was a movie lover. And from then on, you know, when they started talking about, look, this particular performance, I started to pay way more attention to performances as I got older. So for a while there, I just wanted to go see movies that looked good. You know, that was about it. That's all I really wanted when I was younger. But now I kind of want the whole enchilada. And they just sort of kicked off that whole, like, look, man, when you break a movie down, there's several little layers that you want to look at. And for me, it's, you know, how well is it directed and written? How well is it shot? How well is it acted? You know, how well do they direct these actors? Which is why I thought 2015 is actually one of the richest, you know, years in movies, because I was trying to dig through and find my top five. And there's so many that I'm just like, this is an honorable mention, but it pains me to give it an honorable mention, but it's not in the top five. So, you know, like, it's one of those things where it becomes harder and harder for me, I guess, to sort of break down, like, what it is I look for and how I look for it. So then when I go to movies with people, as soon as it's over, I'm trying to, like, get in their ears and be like, look, this is what I love. What do you think?
Wow.
And being able to discuss a movie, you know, not just be like, oh, I liked it. Being able to discuss a movie tells you whether or not it was good or bad and why, because why is always what's most important.
What's cool, though, is to have that, you know, why the movie was good, you know, just from an entertainment standpoint, like I really liked it, or I really got it, you know, and or I wasn't picking out problems with it. But what you said was really, really interesting, is that when you see enough of them and you see enough, I guess, probably bad movies or movies that you would want to be a little bit better, when they're really done well and you can understand everything from the acting, the directing, the cinematography, and you can get in there with those moving parts, right? And be able to notice and kind of share some of the reasons why it was so great. But a lot of that's just lost on the viewers. So that's cool that you're able to kind of share those things with them that they would never notice otherwise.
Absolutely. And then I'm one of those people who, you know, when I go to the movies, sometimes I like to take people and sometimes I like to go alone. Sometimes it depends on the director. You know, if Martin Scorsese puts out a movie, I usually want to go alone because I just want to digest, because he's Martin Scorsese. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those... That's one of those characters in the Hollywood like realm that I want to respect and be like, look, I got to pay attention to what Martin Scorsese is putting on the screen. But then some movies, like say The Force Awakens, that's a group watch thing. You got to take people and go with and experience it together. So sometimes Scorsese makes those group movies, but not always. You know, those are the ones I try to go and savor and just take in.
Well, we're kind of
an interesting little coin flip, I guess, if you want to.
We're letting people call in and text in with their favorite movie heroes. Some of the most important parts of movies is some of those heroes, like throughout the history. And so, you know, like you've got a Han Solo, right? In the Star Wars ones. We do 312-981-7200. People are texting in and calling in. Ike has his favorite movie hero. Ike, welcome to WGN.
Hello. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Ike. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Okay, I have to say my favorite movie hero, and this is the hero that's not talked about in pop culture much, and I think he totally represents America, just like the character of Rambo, Snake Plissken from Escape from New York, played by Kurt Russell.
Snake Plissken. Okay, yeah. Wow, a post-apocalyptic, like, kind of bad guy, good guy. That's pretty cool. What do you think, Blake?
I absolutely agree. I think he's one of the more underrated, you know, heroes. Because the reason why we really connect, I think, as an audience with him is because, much like Han Solo, when you first meet Han Solo, Snake Plissken's very much an anti-hero. And then over time, you start to realize that he's your guy. And by the time the movie's over, that, you know, that American spirit, that hero by any means necessary type character, you're in love with him. I mean, you as an audience member, he's the guy you want saving your butt when you're in trouble. You know, that kind of thing. So, yes, Snake Plissken. Definitely, I think he is underrated, as Ike said, but I also think that he's definitely got a lot of weight. In fact, I mean, it's Kurt Russell, too, man. And what a movie star Kurt Russell is. He's not just like an actor. He's a movie star. And those don't exist, you know, across the board anymore like they used to back in the classic Hollywood era.
Well, thanks, Ike. Happy New Year, and thanks for calling into WGN.
Thank you. You too.
All right, thanks. Now, Blake, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, too, is as far as movie stars. You know, there are some people
yes.
that are great actors or actresses. You know, Meryl Streep mm-hmm. is a great actress, and she's so many different characters in so many different movies. But then there's some people that are just like Robert Redford is just Robert Redford. You know, he's just playing himself. What's that dynamic for those actors that can kind of do that? I get away with, I guess, just being themselves in every movie.
There's just, I don't know, you know, it's funny because whoever, I'm not trying to like, you know, answer your question with a question, but my question when someone, because you're not the first person to ever ask me that. And my response is always, I think the person who can really answer that is going to be the first producer that gave that actor their shot. Who was it that found him and thought that's going to be somebody someday? Because then they became an icon like Robert Redford, who now, you know, mostly directs and produces and runs the Sundance Film Festival. So, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, that guy just kind of did everything there was to do, and now he just does whatever he wants. And some movies, you know, you can say, like, Robert Redford, man, what a performance. He really brought it. But when you've been in so many things, then you do get sort of pigeonholed into this idea that, like, well, he's only really playing himself. I mean, another actor like that, I think, is James Spader. You know, James Spader made a splash in the 80s, playing pretty much the bad guy in like, Brat Pack films. Then he became a serious actor working with Steven Soderbergh. And then if you watch him on television, because you can see him every week in, like, Blacklist or, for a while there, Boston Legal or The Practice, people were like, oh, he's kind of just playing himself. And I'm like, ah, there's way more nuance to James Spader, but how much of James Spader have you seen? So there's, you know what I mean? Like, there's kind of a weird, like with Robert Redford, I mean, for me, like, the movies that I loved him in are, like, All the President's Men. Okay, that's a perfect example of a great Robert. And part of it's who he's working with. You know, like, they just bring out the best in him. But then sometimes you're like, you know, like, my mom loved Robert Redford. You know, she's a big Robert Redford fan, but he's just so handsome and, like, he's a movie star. But then I'm like, but there are movies where you could say Robert Redford, the actor. And those are probably the movies Robert Redford loved the most.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul Newman. Here's a great example. Paul Newman is probably the best example of this. That man could act. He could act like it was nobody's business. However, he was a movie star as well, which meant he was in a lot of stuff, and you could probably name five movies off the top of your head, and you've probably never even seen everything he's done. But you just know because he's Paul Newman. But, like, for me, my favorite movie with Paul Newman, it's a tie. It's between Slapshot, which, if I remember my trivia about him correctly, that's his favorite movie he ever made.
Nice.
You know, he had more fun making that movie than he did anything else.
Oh, wow.
But the other movie that I love him in more than just about anything he ever did was The Hustler.
Oh.
The Hustler is my number four movie of all time, and I love just trying to get people to watch it, especially people, you know, my age. Because I'm 30 years old, and I found The Hustler when I was, like, 25. I was like, wow, where's this movie been my whole life? This is one of the coolest movies I've ever seen.
Wow, and
I try to get people to sit and watch it, and it's usually a success, but it's kind of hard because it's black and white, and it's older, and, you know, it's... There's a lot of things people are like, really? Do we have to watch that? And I'm like, give it 10 minutes and tell me you're not interested after 10.
He is one of the coolest guys too. And so, you know, ultimately the bottom line, the studios are there to make some money. And so if they can have a marketable star that people just will come and show up and buy tickets for and see, and, you know, like a current one, like Vince Vaughn comes to mind, and he's one. And we'll talk about this as soon as we get back from the break as well. But so you can have movie stars that are like bankable, iconic people. You hope they're themselves, at least their fans do when they show up. And then you've got these franchises. And when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about Star Wars, one of the biggest movie franchises of all time. This incarnation of it, biggest opening and probably going to be the biggest money-making movie of all time as well. It's Dane Neal in Studio 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in until 5 a.m. John Hansen under the weather this morning. And the weather's kind of calm right now, but it is going to be a beautiful day. Thank you, Joey. Appreciate that. And thanks to you, too, for coming up with the song. A guy on the line with us now is helping us make sense of all the things that are going on in the movie world, helping us come to grips with some of our favorite heroes throughout the history of movies and sharing some of those people that kind of straddle that line between actor, movie star, or both. Some of the texts that we've got in, and of course you can add yours as well at 312-981-7200. So Blake, they've got James Caan is one of their favorite heroes, Thief. And that's Mike from Worth, Bruce Willis from Die Hard, Humphrey Bogart. Well, there's a difference, right? Those Humphrey are some of their favorite heroes. Someone had mentioned, I don't know if he's a hero, but George Clooney. And then, of course, even though Paul Newman may love Slapshot, the fans, of course, that was a huge, I mean, it was a huge favorite, like a cult favorite. But also, like Cool Hand Luke, you know, what we have here is a failure to communicate. So on the line with us, Blake Stubbs, former movie critic with 1470 WMBD and a host at Eberfest in Champaign. The biggest movie franchise, probably at least one of them. I mean, when we're in the middle of a Harry Potter situation, we think maybe that. But Star Wars has been so big for so long, and this one may be the biggest ever.
Absolutely. You know what? I was recently on the show right after Star Wars, and I got to tell you, I'm a lifelong fan. I was not disappointed by The Force Awakens. I like where this is going. And that was always kind of hard to say because, you know, the prequels are very divisive. You know, there's people that don't like the prequel trilogy. They only, you know, hold the original trilogy to be Star Wars. I may or may not be one of those people. I don't want to go too deep on that. But definitely, you know, this franchise with this film, it could become the biggest film of all time. That is true. You mentioned that right before the break. And the getting the movie stars to come out for it, like Harrison Ford, didn't exactly hurt their chances. So, you know, that and to be fair to Harrison Ford, that man can act. And he definitely brought it in that film as well. It's one of those things when I keep talking about movie stars, sorry, I just keep going to this whole thing where I'm like, you know, inside every movie star is a real actor. There's a part they were always born to play. He's had a couple of them. If you want to talk about Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones being one of them, Han Solo being another one. But then look at movies like Witness. You know, he was nominated for that. And then you've got, you know, The Fugitive, which, I mean, I know Tommy Lee Jones won the Oscar for, but it's hard not to forget Harrison Ford in that. Regarding Henry, first time he worked with J.J. Abrams. Another great performance. So there's more to Harrison Ford than just, you know, big budget, big dollars. There's some really true great acting performances there too.
Well, here's the thing, you know, with Star Wars especially, they have kind of this built-in fan base, built-in audience, built-in merchandising. And it's like when, you know, critics were reviewing The Hunger Games, where they basically said, well, it's not that great of a movie, but if you like it, if you're a fan of the series, you're going to enjoy it. So for this one, you're saying this one can stand on its own. It is going to certainly appeal to Star Wars fans. But for those Star Wars fans that are looking for something that's really going to be a great story, it's there too.
Yes. And in fact, this is one of those things where with this movie being as big as it is, okay, and you know, the franchise, you know, having this great legacy and the merchandising making it really hard to not know what Star Wars is. The people who, you know, may have never seen Star Wars could walk into this movie because there are those people out there that just Star Wars missed them, you know, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. I want to go with you when you see it the first time. I want to see what you think about it. But The Force Awakens could be walked in completely blind if you could walk out and have had a great time in a theater and probably have a lot to talk about afterwards. That's a very good thing, especially for a film that's making as much money as it is.
Now, I know the paychecks were probably decent for, you know, some of our favorite actors and characters from those first movies. But do you think, you know, when they're established and they don't need to do it, did the script have to be good to get Harrison Ford to participate? Probably.
Without talking too much about the film and I mean, knowing that he is a primary character in it, it did have to be good. In fact, I don't think they would have got him. I think money, this is probably, he could end up, I think, from this film, be the highest paid actor on one film ever. That's something that, you know, once it's all like tallied up, they could look at that and say, look, you know, I mean, he's tied in with, he's got a 0.5% of the profits on this film tied in on top of his fee to just appear in the film. So he's going to get paid in perpetuity because Star Wars is never going out of style. so it's one of those things where, like, and that's just this film. You know, I mean, think about the fact that he made, I think, like $10,000 when he did A New Hope.
Right.
So that tells you right there, like, he's come a long way. And he definitely, for this, I think that it's warranted 100%. I think if you wanted to get this back on track and make it so that it was, you know, unequivocally lovable for Star Wars fans, Harrison Ford had to be in this movie. And in my opinion, if the man wants his money, pay him his money, because he's Han Solo and we want Han Solo back. You know what I mean? Like, you'd be hard pressed to get me to love it as much as I do if Han Solo just wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could have actually missed Star Wars. I was there back in 1977. Watching the first one as a kid in the theaters. I was there at the Zares trying to get a hold of one of the Star Wars action figures. Of course, they were sold out. You know, it was difficult to get them. So I've been there. And then I've got now a 9-year-old son who just went with his uncle and saw the IMAX 3D version, where we just had kind of giant theater blur vision. And so he saw that. But he's been exposed to the Star Wars kind of franchise the whole time. They've got so many cartoons and the Clone Warriors and all of this. And so many of the kind of team photo of either characters or type of characters, you know, everyone's kind of familiar with. And he absolutely loved it. So we got a hold of those first few movies and watched those. I think it was after he came back, so he could see some of the prequels. And I'm surprised at what they were able to do special effects wise back then, right? When they didn't have all of those tools. But back then, I mean, you'll remember this, Blake, it was mind blowing, you know, when you saw what they were doing.
That was one of those things. My dad was there, tried to be there day one in 77 to see A New Hope. And when I was being introduced to movies as a kid, when I was little, I mean, we're talking like, you know, 5-6 years old, and you watch a movie with dad. Star Wars was one of the first things I remember watching with him. And he always said every time, and it was one of those things where, like, I know he knows he's told me this, but I know he loves to tell this every time. The special effects in that movie were so far ahead of everything they had ever seen at the time in movies that was really one of the biggest reasons why it's so beloved. You know, that's why people love it so much. And it's because it took them and did what movies by nature should do, and it transported the audience to some place completely new that they had never been before. That's why Star Wars still kicks with a lot of people. It really just, it clicks, I should say, with a lot of people. And what I love is that you have, like you just said, your 9-year-old went and saw it with an uncle, and they both walked out with smiles on their faces. I'd be really interested to have two separate conversations with them about Star Wars and be like, look, you know, for uncle, who's been around and knows the franchise, what did you think about this? And for the young guy, I want to say, hey, what did you think of this? What, like, how did you take all this in? Because, I mean, your 9-year-old is around a lot of technology-filled movies. You know, special effects are kind of hard to impress younger crowds with. This movie still impresses younger crowds, and some of it's the same old tricks they used in the 70s.
Yep. Yep. I mean, no, you're right, and that's a great point, too, because Star Wars the Original came out when it was the only thing doing anything like this. And now, of course, you have, you know, Avengers, and you have Iron Man, and you have Captain America, and you have all these movies, all with a lot of the same, at least, capabilities, right, of doing things on the visual side. Well, this is definitely going to be one of the top 5 movies for 2015, probably, and we're saying probably one of the biggest movies, if not the biggest of all time. We're going to take one more break, and when we come back, Blake is going to go through the top 5 movies of 2015. You can do your suggestions as well, 312-981-7200. You can text them in and give your thoughts or even your favorite top 5 movies for this year. We'll talk about some of your favorite heroes as well when we come back. It's Dane Neal on 720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio with you until 5 a.m. talking something that people, I think, are going to be doing a lot over the weekend. They're going to be watching movies. One of the movies that they're going to be watching, at least according to the ticket sales, is, of course, Star Wars. On the line with us now, we've had him. He is a former movie critic with 1470 WMDB and one of the hosts at EbertFest in Champaign, the one and only Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome back.
Thanks for having.
So we've had a number of people texting in and calling in as far as their heroes. And then, all, of course, that kind of dynamic, whether it's a movie star or whether it's an actor, a guy who I think is considered to be a pretty good or a really good actor. But he is definitely his own quirky self in most things, is Christopher Walken. That's one of the suggestions.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And Christopher Walken is just one of those guys where right now, I mean, for the audiences, like the wide breadth of audiences that love him, right. You could just like put him in a movie doing an impression of himself for 90 minutes and everybody would love it. Like, that's just that Christopher Walken. Everybody,
I just need
loves
more cowbell.
You know? Well, cowbell. Yeah, I mean, get yourself
you
a chicken.
You can never have too much cowbell, ever. Ever.
Oh, right, exactly. And you know what? That's one of the things that I guess when you you have kind of that thing that resonates with people, I guess he had done it. That's what people say to him as he's walking down the street. People aren't talking about some of the more successful or serious movie roles. They're just saying more cowbell in the airport to him.
Right. However, as much as anyone should love Christopher Walken, and it's worth it to do so, you have to see him in The Deer Hunter. And then you know why everybody thinks he's this incredible actor, because he truly is. And he won a very well-deserved Academy Award for that performance. So that's one of those, like, I want to make sure people know Christopher Walken isn't just this, like, character. He is a true actor's actor. And you can find that in The Deer Hunter. I mean, there's other films, but The Deer Hunter is probably the seminal performance that you have to check out if you're a fan of Christopher Walken.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not a super pleasant movie, but there's
no,
some amazing acting in 6-3-0 also offered Joseph Cotten in The Third Man as a favorite hero in a film, bumbling through his life, had to make a gut-wrenching decision, and he doesn't get the girl. So it doesn't always end, you know, with a happy ending, and you still get some great heroes out of that.
Exactly. No, and that's one of those, I was going to say, Joseph Cotten, you know, a frequent collaborator with Orson Welles. I mean, those guys, they put out some quality stuff. You know, it's one of those things where, like, if you want to talk about, like, a hero as an actor, and this is funny thing, when you say greatest all-time heroes, I'm like, am I thinking characters? Am I thinking actors? And I'm just like, you know what? You could have huge discussions on both ends. I mean, sometimes for me, it's like, well, Indiana Jones, but that's Harrison Ford. You know, I can't right. decide which one I want to talk about more. So yeah, no, I mean, I love, like, all these suggestions have been great. It's one of those things where I'm like, if you don't know, or like, you know, an actor's name, you're like, you know what? I haven't watched one of their movies in a while. Put one of them in. And I want to throw out there, too, Daisy Ridley in The Force Awakens. She's going to be everybody's hero in the next few years because she's so splendid in that film. Yes, absolutely. Mark my words, please. If you take anything away from anything I've said tonight, Daisy Ridley is going to be a thing. I'm really happy about it.
Joey in the booth is nodding in agreement as well. And I wanted to mention, too, Robert gave a call in, and he had said that he has such a big fan. He's a fan of Paul Newman for sure, but on the Star Wars side, still has unopened toys that he has. So on the merchandising side, Star Wars has really kind of done the full 360 on how to benefit from a movie. And so it is definitely going to be one of the best movies or the top five movies of 2015. But we did get a text from someone else that says that they're calling us Star Wars fanboys, and I guess we are. But we're not alone.
We are.
773 saying Fury Road is the best movie of the year. Definitely up for the awards.
I'm going to talk about Fury Road. I have not forgotten the Fury Road fans out there. No. Trust me, I'm with you on that as well. I can Star Wars fanboy for hours, but Fury Road really hit me when I saw it this year.
Well, let's talk about it. And here's part of the reason is one of my favorite movies of all time was the original Road Warrior. It was like the original movie. I mean, I loved every bit about it, you know, whether it was the music or just kind of the post-apocalyptic, we need gas and all the different crazy characters that went along with it. When they said that not only was going to have the original director, but they were going to remake that movie, I'm like, how can you do it? But they did.
They did. And you know what? Depending on the day and which one I've watched most recently, Fury Road outdoes it. It's one of those things where, like, I could change, you know, if I watch Road Warrior tomorrow, I could probably change my opinion back because I just love Road Warrior so much. But Fury Road, man, that was a whole new thing if you went and saw that in a theater. And that's sort of what that's what Road Warrior was when people saw that. You know, that became sort of a template for how you made an action film for about 20 or 30 years. And then George Miller came back and made Mad Max Fury Road, and now he's redefined the template that he set in place 30-plus years ago. And that's one of the reasons why Fury Road, I think, is one of the best films of the year, without question. And in fact, like, it's one of those things where I was trying to go through, like, all this stuff that I saw, and I, you know, Fury Road didn't come out late in the year. It came out in May. So, you know, in the height of, you know, Avengers and all these other crazy things, Fury Road was the best thing I saw throughout, you know, the first, well, I would say 3/4 of the year, up until, you know, you get into Oscar season and all these big contenders are coming out. And of course, Star Wars was the big event film. But yeah, Mad Max Fury Road, from the performances to the direction to the acting, the cinematography, the style of it, it was just...
Well, Blake, don't you think, too, that it's, I mean, it has to be really, really good in order to kind of transcend some of those typical restrictions based on either reviews or the awards, because it's everything that your normal movie that's considered a top, you know, five movie. I mean, not, and I'm not talking about box office. I'm just talking from reviews. And then on the award season, it's everything none of those movies are.
Right. Well, and see, the thing about Fury Road is that it has this weird sort of, people, you know, like to say, like, oh, the script, you know, there wasn't much of a story. I'm like, that's the whole reason why this is something new. You're not going in to see the same thing. And it is practically a 2-hour chase. You know, it's a 2-hour action packed with a few breaks here and there to let you, the audience, catch your breath. But man, the action was so incredible and over the top that you couldn't look away when you were watching it. That tells you right there that it's a great film. And it may not be, it may, because it's an action film, maybe you don't think it's a great film. You know, what great action films are there? It's usually the dramas or, you know, something that's really heart-wrenching that takes home Best Picture as a trophy. But to be honest with you, Fury Road's got to be in the top. It's got to be in the top 10 of the year come Oscar time. But it's in my top 5 this year. It was one of the best experiences I had in the theater.
312-981-7200. People are calling in and texting in with their thoughts on not only their favorite movie hero of either this year, of course, of all time, but also them of their top movies from 2015. John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, and Steve McQueen have all been added to the roster, and I don't think you can quarrel with any of those guys.
No, you can't deny that. Those are three of the baddest dudes to ever walk in front of a camera, easily. No question. I wouldn't mess with any of them. I wouldn't even try to joke with any of them, let alone mess with them.
That's awesome. So for 2015, we've got at least one of the movies that's in your top five, but what are the other four?
The other four, there was a movie called Room that is out now. You can maybe catch it at a theater. It stars Brie Larson, who would probably be my current front runner for Best Actress this year, directed by Lenny Abrahamson. It's actually a independent film. And as I know it, it's an independent film. It's very small. It's about a woman who was abducted and had a child while in captivity. And they live in just a room, a shed. And she tries to make this young man, you know, grow up. He's about 5 years old, and tries to make him have a life. And then the hope is that they can get out and she can, you know, save her son. It's insanely compelling. I mean, from start to finish, I was hooked. And Brie Larson, you know, with Short Term 12, which came out in the last couple of years, really sort of turned some heads as far as her dramatic chops go. And she's an incredible talent, just, you know, from, you know, how beautiful she is, how talented she is. But this movie, this is one of those real heart-wrenching performances that you just, like, you won't be able to look away once you start seeing it. So Room is probably my number two movie of the year, for sure. And I'm not really saying my top five in any particular order, but number two on that top five list, Room definitely gets a C.
Okay,
and
good.
Moving, yeah.
Well, good to see Room. And I mean, we've only got a couple minutes left, so I do want to run through them a little bit. But what a contrast, right? You've got intergalactic good versus evil with every kind of thing and creature you can imagine. And you've got people in a room, right? All great movies.
Yeah, people in a room. And then the other three big ones, Star Wars is one of them. That was the movie of the year. That was the event that everyone had to go to and everyone will go to. And it's kind of hard to avoid it. In fact, if you haven't seen it, and I won't spoil anything because I think everyone needs to see this as pure as they can, go out and see Star Wars. You owe it to yourself as a movie lover if you love movies. Also, I have to give a big shout-out to a movie called 99 Holmes, which I actually saw at Ebertfest this year before it was officially out, directed by Ramin Barani, who is the director I was talking about earlier that, you know, his career, Roger Ebert really loved his work, and rightfully so. 99 Holmes is not a movie you should miss. It definitely tackles some real issues, and it absolutely is one of those things that the performances are just so raw and the direction is so tight and great. And then finally is DiCaprio's big movie, The Revenant, where he teamed up with Alejandro Iñárritu. But that is the most beautifully shot film of the year. And a close second for that best shot category would be The Hateful Eight. I think those two are going to duke it out in best cinematography. But The Revenant is hard to look away from, and it's grueling, and it's intense, and I would be very hard-pressed to see anybody walk away with best actor other than DiCaprio this year.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you, is this finally what gets it done? And then people are saying, too, that this is the vehicle almost created specifically for that purpose.
Yeah, I actually, you know what? If DiCaprio retires after this, I don't know what he can do to top it. And I've followed his career, man. I'm a fan. You know, like when I was young and he was the pretty boy in Titanic, I didn't like him. But as I grew older, I watched like everything he ever did. And I realized this guy is an actor and a movie star, just going back to our conversation earlier. But right. This film, man, this performance is so raw. I mean, the stories you can read about like what the production was like are intense in and of themselves. They sound like they're straight out of a Werner Herzog story. So I can't stress enough that DiCaprio, for me, he won me over, man. He's 100% best actor this year.
It's going to be exciting to see that, to see all the movies on the list. And of course, it's so great for the listeners to have you to kind of share not only your perspective, the thought process, the movies, and be able to share so many things. We're blessed that you are spending so much time watching movies and then spending so much time with us here on WGN tonight. So it's Blake Stubbs. And so, Blake, let people know where they can keep up with you on social media, catch up with all your adventures.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Blake Stubbs. And I try to tweet about movies as much as I can. When I get out of them, I usually give at least some kind of brief 140-character reaction. As of late, you know, The Hateful Eight is probably the thing I just most recently saw. So I'm going to actually put up – I've been trying to, you know, digest that movie because it's 3 hours long over the last couple of days. But it was definitely worth checking out in a theater, especially in 70mm if you can. 70mm, I could have done a whole show tonight just about that.
So
I love it.
So Blake Stubbs on Facebook, do you got a Twitter handle?
At Blake Stubbs. You can find me, Blake Stubbs, on Facebook and at Blake Stubbs, BlakeStubbs on Twitter.
All right. Thanks, Blake. Thanks so much for taking time out, sharing your thought process, for being on WGN as well, and Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year to you guys, too, and hopefully I'll see some of you at the movies.
All right, Blake. That is Blake Stubbs. And this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. It is 3:32. Here's Roger Badish. I also want to boogie. Thank you. Thank you, Joyce.
Just trying to make you dance. Yeah, I saw Roger dancing earlier, so I've got to keep the vibes going.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate the enthusiasm. I don't know that I have dancing energy. But Roger, you'll be our designated dancer.
Yeah, I do a great chair dance.
Nice.
Yeah, I just rock it in the chair here. I just, you know.
Feel free to rock it at any point.
I don't want to rock it too hard.
No,
because I don't want to break the chair.
Yeah, right.
You know, we don't have that many left.
Good to know. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio. It was so cool to talk to Blake Stubbs about movies, heroes. I mean, these are some of the things that I think so many people have in common. We can come from different backgrounds and have different experiences, but a lot of us have seen the same movies or been touched by those same movies or inspired by those same heroes. And so, Roger, when it comes to movies, do you have a couple of movie heroes?
Oh, sure. John Wayne, Steve McQueen, Clint Eastwood, Spencer Tracy.
Spencer Tracy.
I'm going back.
A little cerebral there.
Yeah.
I mean, a little different,
yeah.
Right? Not so much car chasing with Spencer Tracy.
But, I mean, as far as acting goes, wow, Spencer Tracy. You can't get much better than that. You get into the light entertainment, Gene Kelly.
He was a fantastic chair dancer before he got into more conventional dancing.
Yeah. I mean, those are the guys. The gal, Sally Field.
As
strong.
A hero? What do you mean with the union sign as she stood on the lunchroom table?
Just a whole bunch of her roles that she took. They were always strong female roles. And she just captivated on the screen. I just always enjoyed seeing movies that she was in. Peter O'Toole, I enjoyed in all his movies. It's, you know, I could go on and on. If I pull out my list of favorite films and got my brain working a little bit better at this,
oh, that's good.
At this hour, but
you've agreed with some of the kind of the ones that America agrees with. You know, you got your Clint Eastwood, you got your Steve McQueen's, you got your John Wayne's, you got those types, and then of course bringing in a Spencer Tracy. That's kind of a unique, because he's very strong, but also very cerebral, and but also a hero in some of the movies.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
So, Joey, do you have like a movie hero? Is there someone out there from like the hero side of the movie world that you say, I got to buy a ticket, got to go see that guy?
You know, I was a big Star Wars guy, so I think I kind of have to stick in that realm. I mean, I could go, you know, a Captain America or a Superman.
So, but like a Yoda was a big...
Could do a Yoda. Or it's funny because I sometimes think of, okay, the originals, you look to Mark Hamill or Harrison Ford as your guy, but then also I grew up with the prequels, so Ewan McGregor, Liam Neeson kind of hold the big Jedi spots for me, which is, I know it's kind of a little strange, but they hold it for me. Or Pierce Brosnan was, you know, my Bond.
Okay.
So those kind of figures, I think, are the ones I'd probably think of first.
Wow. Okay.
I know it's kind of a little out there, but a little
different. Are, well, and also the 773 Harry Potter as a hero. Certainly he was a hero in those movies.
Yeah,
one of those,
that's a good one.
Main guys, but not necessarily someone that you think of as a traditional, like you couldn't see him in a car chase, maybe like a wand battle, right, in a chase on a broomstick. On the line with us now, and so many of our heroes when it comes to just, I guess, regular daily life, a lot of them are on the athletic field and the football field. With it being New Year's Day, so many big bowl games are happening, and there's action on the field to a certain extent, but so much cool stuff is happening in the parking lot, right, where people are out there not only getting ready for the game, but also enjoying tailgating. And on the line with us, she is a veteran of tailgates and great ones all around the country. And she is working on a book on elevated tailgates as we speak that we're going to look forward to coming up in 2016. It's the one and only Beth Peterson. Beth, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane. Hey, Dane. Hi, guys. How you doing today?
Good. Before we get into the tailgate situation, and when I told Joey that we were going to have you on to talk tailgates, he said that he is part of a quote-unquote, and these were his words, tailgate family. And so he will he's there doing it. So he's going to add his thoughts in as well. But before that, I know that you watch movies on occasion. Mm-hmm. And so who, like throughout your history, like who were some of your big heroes from the cinema?
All right. Well, my day today was spent a lot in front of the TV. We did a lot of bowl watching today and a lot of football watching today, but I squeezed in a little bit of Legally Blonde. I think there was a marathon going on because I kept catching it all day long. And then
what? So like Reese Witherspoon is your hero?
Yeah, she was pretty much a hero in that movie. I mean, she saved the day. And she not only saved the day, but she, she saved the woman that was on trial for murder with all of her, you know, her beauty smarts and stuff like that. She figured out the case. And she also went from kind of like this dumb blonde to like being, you know, she got into Harvard, and then she, you know, ended up graduating from Harvard Law School, and then she saved the day and saved the case.
So for those listeners out there that aren't maybe necessarily as familiar with Legally Blonde, because it isn't one of those kind of blockbuster or, you know, kind of, they don't probably view that in film school. It was Reese Witherspoon who is kind of like, right, that was her role. I mean, yeah, it said it was kind of a dumb blonde, but then she was secretly smart, and she overcame the oppression of her boyfriend and the stereotypes of her situation, and then went on to become not only an academic success, but save the day in many ways.
That's right. You remember the movie. Yeah, that was it all right there. She's great. It's good. That, and then, of course, I'm going with all girls. I'm going with heroines. I love Jennifer Lawrence in Hunger Games. She's great. One of my favorites is Mulan. Do you remember Mulan?
Yeah, look
Disney
at you.
Cartoon?
Oh, you're sure. Right, so now we have an animated hero who, but she was, I mean, when you think about it, if you just, I had not considered that. So thank you, Beth. Number one, of course, Legally Blonde. I'd never even thought of that as a movie to consider, just based on because it's kind of like a fluffy movie. You know, it's not, there's anything groundbreaking or super, but yes, she's a hero in it. But then Mulan, and this is one of Vivi's favorite movies, she absolutely loves it. But that one, even though it's a cartoon, this is a girl slash lady slash woman who saves all of China.
That's right. She saves all of China. It's one of my favorites. I knew there was a reason why I love that Vivi, other than the fact that she's just the cutest thing ever. But yes, Mulan is, she saves China, and she has to disguise herself as a man and, you know, goes to battle and ends up saving the country. It's pretty great.
It is. Okay.
Good role model for girls.
Okay, all right, and that's good, and I'm glad we got that. 312-981-7200. People can still text in and call in with their favorite movie heroes and their resolutions. You know, if they want to, they're giving us some, Roger, they're giving you and I some encouragement on our potential weight situations as well. And on the heroes, from the 773, Tom Cruise saves the world every year, so thank you, and yes, he does. And then from the 219, Duval, Robert Duval, I'm guessing, could be Shelley Duval, right? But it's probably Robert. And then another Robert De Niro. Those are kind of heroes, kind of anti. Well, I think they're just powerful characters, certainly movie stars as well. And so when it comes to heroes of the tailgate, that is you. And you're going to tell us, we're actually going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into tailgating. Number one, the things that you're seeing out there. We're going to get Joey's thoughts on what he and his family do to kind of at least make the food side of a Bears game exciting, even if what happens on the field is a little, depressing. Who knows, right? So make sure that you at least have one part of it being a good time. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Beth Peterson is going to talk tailgating at the highest level as we get into 2016. It's Dane Neal in on 720 WGN. Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio on January 2nd. It is early in the year, but you want to be able to plan for, you know, some of those things that you're going to, I guess, experience throughout the course of the year. And one of the things that people are going to love to do is tailgate for every situation. When it comes to football, this is kind of the season where, I mean, New Year's Day, all the bowl games, but now they've got the new playoff systems. We have extra games. You're going to want to tailgate. You're going to want to tailgate at a high level. When we got into the segment a little bit earlier, we talked about Beth Peterson as a veteran of the tailgate. She's, of course, part of the Coke Zero tailgate tour, and she toured with Dr. Barbecue, Ray Lampe. You've been to so many kind of iconic football, either stadiums or matchups, where as much as Joey says here, you know, Soldier Field, people love their tailgating. Where for this, it's like a religion, right, for some of these places?
That's right. I mean, their families are involved for years and years and years in their tailgate experiences at stadiums. A lot of college football stadiums around the country I went to. I was part of the ESPN Coke Zero tailgate tour, and so we got to go to, like, some of the best matchups around the country. And, like, honestly, when you were talking before about, you know, what was happening on the field, like, I actually didn't care really so much about the games. I was really just focused on the food and the fun that was happening around the stadium. So that's pretty much where my focus is for football, is in the tailgating. And right now, home gating is a big thing because, you know, the games are starting to become not maybe necessarily about your own team, but about, you know, teams kind of far flung around the country, and you're watching the games, you know, kind of picking a new team to root for. So, you know, it's really not about going out to the parking lot for a lot of people right now. It's about, you know, kind of watching games on a Sunday afternoon in their home or a Saturday afternoon in their home, and what kinds of things you can do to sort of amp up the fun at tailgating your home. That's the big trend right now.
Well, I wanted to ask you, you know, as someone who is an award-winning food enthusiast, competitor and all that, was just the typical tailgate, and you got to see some of the really great ones around the country, was the typical tailgate, were you looking at what was going on and saying, yeah, this is good, it's the kind of thing that we can, you know, kind of know and enjoy, but we can do better?
Oh, well, there were some that, I mean, were over the top and, you know, just, I don't know if I could do better. They were pretty great. You walked in and were like, I mean, people brought their entire, you know, home, I mean, giant RVs and, I mean, really go all out. And again, generations of people involved in that was the big surprise for me, tailgating around the country, was just the generations, the family togetherness, the community togetherness that all these tailgates had. I mean, and people had their roles, the things that they did for each tailgate for year, week after week, year after year. It's like, you know, Aunt Josie brings the chicken wings every single, her famous chicken wings every single week. And, you know, so-and-so runs the grill and so-and-so. And like what I loved in the South were all the different things that they did. Like, for example, in Baton Rouge, you know, they did big cauldrons of jambalaya and, you know, red beans and rice. That was really cool. And they've got, you know, the paddles that are die cast with the team names while they're, you know, stirring the jambalaya. You can see LSU through the, you know, it's really very cool.
Well, you talk about Baton Rouge and LSU. That's certainly one of those places where they just don't have professional sports, right? So college is the biggest thing, and there's so much of an affiliation with the community and the games themselves. And so this is it. This is their big primetime show, and so they do it. So outside of LSU, name a couple other places that you guys went.
One of my favorites was South Carolina. They did an incredible tailgate situation there. They did a low country boil for us, and they the tailgate team, this big family, had like red carpet, chandeliers, big screen TVs everywhere. I mean, this was portable. This is stuff they just put out that day. Now they come back week after week, but they did this low country boil, and the presentation on it was amazing. They made a giant boat, and they had, you know, several people with giant pots that they just poured the low country boil into this boat, and everybody just kind of got around the boat and just started eating, you know, crab and you know, it was incredible. It was just unbelievable. They had an ice sculpture. I mean, it was outrageous.
Now, Joy, for the Bears games, do you guys have ice sculptures for your family, or are these things you're going to incorporate?
I think we need to now on Sunday. I'll go to the store after our show and get an ice sculpture. I don't know. Wild one.
Beth, can you buy an ice sculpture at the store?
I don't know if the grocery store has it. I think it might be a call ahead situation.
So Joey,
it was huge too. It was a big ice sculpture. So I don't know, Joey. I think, you know, you might want to call ahead on that one.
So, well, or because we have ice, it is going to be cold. I think maybe you just make one on site. I think that's exciting.
I can only make stick figures, though. It wouldn't turn out very well.
Well, so Joey, for your family, as longtime Bears fans and tailgaters, what do you guys typically do?
So first and foremost, and I know, you know, my mom will swear by this, the onions start grilling at about 7 in the morning, which really is just that beautiful smell you want when you wake up in the morning. And then from there, add some maybe grilled peppers to it. And then when we get out there, it's skirt steaks, it's salamis, it's anything you could imagine. I think this weekend maybe they inspired us with the Southern flair. Maybe go get some gumbo to incorporate too because it's going to be freezing.
Nice.
But we're big skirt steak people. Even though it's 9:30 in the morning, doesn't matter. That's kind of the tradition that we've done, at least since I can remember.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that. A good skirt steak at any point. I mean, I'll have one on the way home. So, Beth, as people are looking to kind of, you know, either upgrade or elevate, and of course you got the book coming out that you're working on. It's going to be out in 2016. What are some simple things? It doesn't even have to be that simple, but at least approachable things that people can do that'll just blow their tailgate out of the water.
Well, one of the biggest trends right now is doing a full bar, like really having a full bar. You know, cocktail trends are
big.
And so having a full bar, really going all out when it comes to making sure everybody has like a great signature cocktail and then whatever else, you know, you can mix up. Having somebody like actually bartending is kind of a big trend.
That's great. A full bar is way better than just a full cooler, you know, of Pabst Blue Ribbon. No question.
Right. Just or a keg, you know, which I think is pretty traditional, is, you know, just having the beer. But this is like, you know, and also Bloody Marys and all different forms, you know, from using tequila, vodka, all different, you know, the Micheladas. That's a big trend right now, is making sure you've got some great Bloody Marys. You guys love Bloody Marys?
Sure. No, I mean, I do. I don't get it as many of them as I probably should because of the health properties involved. I should probably add that into. It's one of the food groups, right? For a tailgate
it's
food
like
group.
It's really good for you. It's like a salad in some vodka. Right. It's a vegetable.
Right, right. The health properties of the cayenne pepper is good too. So a little spicy is nice. And you got some celery. Hey. But people go over the top with the Bloody Marys now because now you'll see them. It's almost like a bouquet, right, of right. stuff. There's like burgers and hot dogs and jerky and everything jammed into it.
That's right. And if I – the one big thing that I think – and the book is going to definitely provide inspiration for this, is over the top. I think when I think about tailgate, especially right now, it's like everything over the top. So for sure, the Bloody Marys are like, it's like a full meal. You know, you want to, you know, there's competitions about, you know, how to make the most stacked Bloody Mary. And, you know, as you go around the city of Chicago, even all the bars on Sundays for football games, you're going to find some great Bloody Marys.
Well, Joey mentioned steaks, and of course you're going to have, at least for skirt steaks, regular steaks, ribeye, you're going to have some fans there. And then you've got kind of the traditional favorites. You know, you've got your sausages, your brats, your hot dogs, your burgers. So on the food side, do we always have to go with grilling? I mean, is that a requisite, or is there some other couple food items that you can suggest that people can enjoy?
Yeah, no, I think it's the grill has definitely got the glory at the tailgate, but the tailgate table is full of, you know, people bringing their own dishes, you know, the dips. I mean, think about how many great yummy dips, the Reuben dip or the pepperoni pizza dip or the onion dip. I mean, those are really big. And then, of course, the wings. I mean, there's like 5 million variety of chicken wings out there. So, no, the tailgate table is full of all different kinds of foods that are not, you know, they're pre-made, make ahead, bring to the game, set on the table, and people enjoy.
For people who want to catch up with you, follow not only all of the things that you're doing with Yummy Nation and all of the other things that you're doing on the food side, all your appearances, you know, on television and certainly some of the things that you're doing on the content side, as well as the latest on when the book's going to come out. Let's give out that social media.
Well, Beth's Table is where you can find me when it comes to tailgating, and Yummy Nation is my website, and you can also find me at BethPeterson.com.
Sounds good. Beth, happy new year and happy tailgating to you, and then we'll have Joey give you a call if he runs into any snags on Sunday.
Absolutely, Joey. Give me a call if you need anything, and
deal.
Happy new year to you guys too.
All right, thanks. That is Beth Peterson, BethsTable.com. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It is 4 a.m. Here's Roger Badish. Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ill. I got a bad case. 720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase studio till 5 a.m. today, beginning of the new year 2016. And of course, if you've been listening, we've been talking about, and one of the recurring themes that people have been calling in and texting in at 312-981-7200 is their favorite movie hero, either of this year or of all time. We're also going to open it up to your favorite hero in life. You know, it's one thing to have heroes up on the big screen, but so much more impactful is when we have real life heroes, not only in our lives, in our neighborhoods, in our communities, and on the line with us now. This is a great story, and this is a person that CNN had recognized as one of their top 10 CNN heroes for 2015, and we're blessed to have him here in Chicago with all he does. It is Dr. Dan Ivankovic. Welcome to WGN.
Guys are being morning maniacs today. Happy New Year.
Well, you know what? Somebody's got to do it, right? And we're excited to be able to do it, to be able to bring information, a little bit of fun, and then some great stories about things that are happening in the community. So first off, kudos to you and big, big respect for all the things not only that you've accomplished, but just the motivation behind it. But let the listeners know, of course, you're the co-founder for your nonprofit, One Patient Global Health Initiative. And it takes kind of, especially as everybody is, you know, there's so many people are kind of jaded and cynical about either the medical community and certainly, you know, the challenges that are going on in our streets. But you're there doing your part.
Well, it's a very strange situation because, you know, I think maybe people look at me being all of about 7 feet tall, 300 pounds, and think, okay, how is this guy idealistic? And, you know, when I got into, you know, medical school and sort of had a chance to assess and really be around some amazing doctors, older generation dudes, you know, what I'm doing now is not that much of a departure from what doctors did in the good old days. I mean, it's great to have been, look, CNN is an amazing, you know, group of people. Their Heroes program is going on to 10 years strong now. And yeah, to be one of 90 people in the world that have been named to this honor over the past decade, it's amazing. But if you really think about it, doctors used to be heroes. You know, doctors used to be the number one most respected profession. And you're right, in your lead-in talking about, you know, how we do get jaded and that medicine has really sort of degenerated to the point where it's become all about the dollar. When you look at pharmaceutical companies, you look at hospitals, you look at insurance companies, the patients are never put first. And, you know, me and my little idealistic self said, you know, I got into this thing to make a difference in the world. And I do believe in my heart of hearts that that's why people go into medicine. It just happens that along the way, many people get lost. There's some incredible doctors out there that are doing amazing work. There are incredible people in the communities. Look, there's tons of heroes, moms, dads, that are raising their kids right, people in their communities and their churches that are trying to impact things. But I think health and being a doctor, it's just one of those things where you touch people on such a personal level. And doing what I do as a trauma and spine and reconstructive surgeon, I have the honor and the privilege to transform people's lives. So, you know, looking at Chicago, where there's over a million people that are living, you know, in a really marginalized condition, there's a tremendous ability to do good in our backyard. And unfortunately, it's a group of people that society has essentially ignored. So it's a, you know, it's an honor. And I'm so thankful that you're taking time out of your show and your day to talk about this, because it's an issue that the people need to understand. There's a whole subset of Americans that are right in front of their face that are really struggling right now to live their lives, to enjoy their potential, and just to, you know, to be healthy.
First off, I don't want to say like give me a break, but it's people like you that are doing, you know, for us to be able to shine a light on some positive things, I think is a huge, it's an honor, it's a luxury, right, for us. There's so many things that happen in the news and a lot of things that we have to share, unfortunately, with this, you know, just in general and in the media, that is just typically negative because it's what's going on. And so for you to be able to get into the medical field, you know, obviously, you know, and based on certainly what you said, you wanted to help people. And then to specifically focus it in an area where there are so many challenges in a number of different ways, whether it's the economic challenges, whether it's just the challenge of the environment or the demographics or just having less either attention and certainly less resources. So when you got into the kind of the situation of helping people, was it because people were coming to you that needed help that didn't necessarily have the means, or were you saying, hey, I want to make a difference to people who really need that difference and you can really have more impact? Did you go out seeking them, or did they just show up at your door?
No, what was crazy is, you know, I went to medical school in Northwestern, just a few blocks away from your studio, and it's a great institution, but unfortunately, you know, it's a Gold Coast hospital, caters to many of, you know, Chicago's elite, you know, people. Very little charity work is done there. Very little Medicaid is covered there. And, you know, what ends up happening in my time as a medical student, you know, we would be there very much in an observational capacity, very little time and very little chance that I had to actually touch patients, to engage patients. I was very much an observer. And, you know, what happened, I was like, oh, man, this sucks. This is stupid. I that's not the kind of doctor I want to be. And, you know, I had to wear a tie. I used to battle them all the time saying, why am I wearing a stupid tie and wearing a lab coat? I mean, there's germs everywhere. And they've since proven that you know, doctors shouldn't wear a tie and shouldn't wear a jacket because it's not hygienic. But it was just not a, it was not a role, and it was not a position that made me feel as though I was being anything more than sort of a trained SEAL, you know, blowing the horns when they told me to. I mean, I wasn't helping people. And when I finally, I went to the VA, the old VA Lakeside that has since been torn down.
Wow.
I had an opportunity to do a rotation where, you know, very short staffed sort of historically. And I was thrust into an environment where basically from 7 a.m. till 5 p.m. And then when I was on call, I was here responsible for these patients. And it was amazing. It was an incredible situation. I thought, wow, this is what medicine is all about. These guys really need me. And it led me to taking a residency spot over at Rush University. And during my internship, I requested, I said, look, I would like to do my entire internship at the old Cook County Hospital. You know, I was there. I saw it. It was literally, it was everything that the ER TV series was and more. I remember my program director saying, are you insane? I said, what do you mean? He goes, people come into my office to beg me to get the hell out of Cook County rotations and not have to be there. You're saying you want to be there for an entire year. I said, yeah, you know, put me in there. And I remember walking in on my first day and literally seeing this massive humanity that was there. You know, people that were waiting in lines that were a block long and thinking, well, who the hell is going to take care of all these people? And I'm like, idiot, it's you, Ivankovich. You're going to take care of these guys. And, you know, I mean, I was their last best hope because, you know, many of them were, you know, were there by no choice of their own. They had to be there. And it was really within my power that even though they were poor and even though they were marginalized to actually reach out and touch a human being, to make a connection, to help them. And it was really my time at Cook County was probably some of the most profound of my life. And it really set the stage for me to understand that there, you know, growing up, look, I'm an immigrant. I grew up on the north side. I grew up in Uptown and Edgewater. And then I graduated from high school at Glenbrook South up in the North Burbs. I never had an idea until I played basketball. I was an all-state and all-American basketball player. And, you know, I got a chance to go into these communities, but I never understood how within our country there were two very distinct faces of the United States. And people living in poverty, it's very rough. It's a tough situation. And for healthcare, you know, people that are poor in our situation, essentially, you know, people of color and people who are poor, they live much less healthy lives. They live shorter lifespans. Yep. It's not, you know, but that's right here. That's in the United States. And I think people just need to, you know, understand I'm not some, you know, radical bleeding heart left winger. I mean, I'm a healer. I'm a doctor. I'm non-denominational with political affiliation. It's just, I'm about people. And it bothers me to get up every day to understand that, you know, in our city, our great city of Chicago, that there is such a widening sort of chasm of disparity.
Well, when you look at those roles that need to be played, or at least, you know, that there is a need for those roles, it's, you know, we're blessed that you're involved and you're doing some of those things. So letting the listeners know, we're talking with Dr. Dan Ivankovich. He is the co-founder for the nonprofit One Patient Global Health. So we're going to talk about some of those areas where you have worked, wanted to have an impact, and they say, you know, it takes a village. You need people who are hardwired, and not everybody is, to get in there. Not only have the desire to do it, but the tolerance for it, and also, of course, the talent. And in the areas that you're referring to, yes, there's challenges on the economic side and on the healthcare side, but specifically challenges related to violence that the people face there. And then, of course, the kind of the medical situations that kind of they don't make the front page. You know, you talk about some of the a lot of the deaths and the shootings and things like that, and when the smoke clears and the news crews have gone away, these people are the ones that have survived, fortunately, are dealing with some health issues, and you're helping them with that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have more with Dr. Dan Ivankovich about everything that he is doing. He talked about his basketball career right. This is a talented guy, not only on the medical side, but also on the sports side, apparently, and the music side. So stay tuned for that. It's Dane Neal in on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, beginning 2016. So the year is starting off. Hopefully, some of the statistics, some of the news stories and the narratives will change when it comes to the challenges and the violence in Chicago. But a guy who has been there to not only be a part of some of the healing, certainly, but also some of the medical care that is so lacking, is on the line with us now. He's one of CNN's heroes, one of the top tens. He is Dr. Daniel Ivankovich. Welcome back to WGN.
This is cool. You know, I got to say, I've been in that in the Allstate studio, and it is one of the really one of the great, you know, views and the just one of the coolest experiences to be on the air with WGN. I grew up with the frequency and just, you know, sitting there on Michigan and watching all the all our fellow Chicagoans kind of looking in and kind of participating. It's a pretty great experience.
Yeah, it is second to absolute none. You know, growing up in the Chicagoland area, of course, right? It's the kind of the soundtrack of your life in so many different ways, and to be able to be a part of it here and share and be, you know, here in the studio and of course share some of these great stories. It's as good as it gets, right? And it's kind of what I got into what I do, to be able to do this. And when you talked about your motivations for getting in on the medicine side, to be able to make a difference, to help people. And certainly, you know, this isn't one of those places, let's say you're out in Des Moines, Iowa, and there's nothing to do. I mean, there is a lot for you to do. 600 surgeries per year, 100,000 people impacted by the program. And in some of the most, you know, it isn't one of those where you can just decide to like fly off somewhere and help people with the Peace Corps and administer, you know, malaria vaccines and all that is wonderful. Sometimes this is just, you know, out of the blue violence that is just so destructive, and you're there helping those people heal and move forward.
Well, you know, it's funny that, you know, for the better part of a decade, I was under radar. I mean, I couldn't, you know, no one was interested in what I was doing and the people that I was caring about. And I do go out of the country. I get called all the time for major disasters to be a first responder. And, you know, what was crazy is that, you know, we went to Haiti in the wake of the earthquake. And in 2010, you know, we went there and, you know, we helped thousands of patients. I and a couple of my colleagues, we discovered, you know, in the wake of this horrible disaster, almost 50 spinal cord injured patients with severe spinal injuries that we airlifted and we treated. And I made the front of the Chicago Tribune, the front page of that, and the Sun Times when I airlifted two of the patients back to Chicago for treatment. And, you know, it was a very humbling experience, but it actually pissed me off because I'm like, I got to go fly, you know, to another country and do the same stuff that I've been doing in my little city here for 10 years to get, you know, noticed. And, you know, everyone wanted to talk about Haiti. I'm like, look, that's a disaster. And, you know, I'm here for the people of Haiti. But damn it, you know, in Chicago, this crap is happening all the time. And you guys don't give a rat's ass about what's happening, you know, a mile away from you. And, so, you know, from that point on, it was, you know, really incredible that, you know, in that year I was named one of the Chicagoans of the Year by Chicago Magazine. And in that 5-year period since, I've been like on a one-man crusade to have people understand that just because Chicago is a top 10 city in the world and we are so widely regarded for our arts, for our music, our lousy sports teams, you know, that, you know, there's stuff really going on that is pressing and needs to be addressed. And I think that, you know, CNN has given me an incredible platform to bring this subject matter to the fold. I mean, they've done it in a very professional, very highly engaging and well-produced manner, and it's been a fantastic experience. But this is something that has given me sort of a platform now where I can continue to fight for Chicago and Chicagoans. Well, at the same time, look, I'll go anywhere in the world they need. You know, Japan, Fukushima, the Philippines. I was a first responder down at after Katrina in New Orleans. Anywhere they need me, I will try to help, but my first priority will always be the city of Chicago.
Well, you mentioned that there is two cities, you know, that there's the city that's kind of at least, well, and both of them have gotten a certain amount, if not a lot, of publicity, right? Chicago is a great city, great food town, architecture, right? Depressing and disappointing sports teams, you know, all of those things. But, you know, more and more, at least in the last few years, the front pages, you know, and some of the news broadcasts around the country have focused on the challenges that Chicago has faced on the violence side. And I know that you are there doing what you can, and maybe you get publicity from going around the country. But also, too, as people see what it is that you're doing, there are other people that may not have thought about it or may not have thought that that was, it could be a rewarding way to utilize what it is for their career. But you got to understand that I'm sure you're inspiring so many people. So how often does it happen where somebody comes up because of some of these things that you've done that's garnered some attention, that they read it and people have come up over your career and said, this is maybe the reason they got into medicine. Maybe this is the reason that they took a turn towards trying to help people in some of these challenged areas with some of this violence. I mean, do you get that? And how rewarding is that if you do?
Well, I think it's really been unfolding because, unfortunately, people in my generation, people in their 40s, people in their 50s, I think they are already fully formed. They're not really gonna change their opinion. I think what has happened is what's been really incredible to me is though the whole social media experience, the whole opportunity there is. These stories now, people can actually reach out to me. I get from all over the country almost daily patients that are asking me for help, that are asking me for my input or asking for recommendations. I had a minister from Africa contact me last month, actually flew out here to have me look at his knee and treat him because in his country, nobody could. There was no insurance. He couldn't have it done. I had a woman with a spinal cord tumor in California calling me, and, you know, we're helping, you know, each of these cases sort of as needed. And in the same light, younger people that read about me or connect with me via Facebook or via Twitter, they are now getting to sort of see what I do. And maybe there are young Dan Ivankoviches that are thinking like, man, medicine sucks. What a horrible, who would want to be a doctor? It's horrible. You know, the fraud, the corruption, the abuse. And then they read these kind of stories. There's another top 10 CNN hero this year that I knew about prior, but now we've become friends. And he's doing really incredible work for the homeless, Dr. Jim Withers. And, you know, these kind of networks and associations and alliances, you know, you get people, you know, you think like, wow, I'm by myself. But then you find someone else who's thinking like you, and you find another person, and you build a network, and you build a collaborative opportunity to do work together. We're talking about a couple of projects here in Chicago that he's bringing his street medicine team. And, you know, young people watch this and they go, yeah, this is cool. Young medical students have reached out to me and, you know, they're like, I want to do what you do. And I said, well, all right, kid. I go, you want to do it, but this is not glamorous. This is, you know, doing this and being in the trenches and on the front lines. It's hard work. And, you know, do you have the stomach? Do you have the tenacity? I mean, it's almost like being in the military. I mean, everybody wants to be a Navy SEAL until they got to go through the rigors of what that is. And I think the social media has been phenomenal in sort of broadcasting our message and our mission and our vision. And a lot of people are connecting with it. I mean, you know, people that have been supporting the program, they can do that. I mean, we are not under radar. I mean, in my career, all this has sort of evolved to where I'm thinking, you know, I'm this lunatic that is the sole guy providing, you know, orthopedic and trauma care to Roseland, to Englewood, to, you know, to Lawndale, North Lawndale, to Austin, you know, for a decade. And then social media hits, and I don't feel so alone anymore. I've actually got, I've got backup. I've got people that are now interested in, you know, I'm lecturing and I'm speaking all over, talking to folks that I may influence. I've been invited in March to be the MC and keynote speaker at the South by Southwest Music Conference. They now have added a weekend that is their med and tech weekend, and there's going to be, you know, 300,000 to 400,000 people there that will be able to reach out and touch me. So, you know, we can talk, we can collaborate. It's just incredible that, you know, there are a lot of people that think what's going on in the world is wrong and the disparity and inequality sucks. But now we can actually rally and do things about it and not just, you know, sit in our homes and be depressed that nothing's going on. We can we have tools and we have, you know, methods that we can use to really build to build sort of a legion of people that are committed to change. You know, for me, it's medicine. For someone else, it may be education. Other people, it may be, you know, infant mortality, birth. You know, it just, there are so many ways to do good. And the message that I would put out to anyone and any young person that wants to make a difference, anyone that is seeking to do good, is that, you know, look around you, open your eyes, and you will see an opportunity to help somebody. And that's really where it all starts. I think as a nation, we're very jaded in that way, that we don't look to help.
Well, you talk about the you know, some of the attention, having people come up and approach you and find out what it is that you do. When we get back from the news break, we're going to talk about specifically what you do on the medical front, as far as some of the procedures and certainly some of those people in those areas that are challenged and need it, how it works, and also what you do with the One Patient Global Health Initiative. And then you brought up South by Southwest, so we'll talk about what you're doing also on the entertainment side and the music side as well. So stay tuned, and of course we'll let everybody know we're talking with Dr. Dan Ivankovich. We'll be back with him in 1 second, but right now this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It is 4:32. Here's Roger Badish.
Everything green in here. Let's try it. I think we got it. Here we go.
WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, 2016. It is January 2nd, coming up on 4:38 in the morning. A guy who is ready to mobilize at any moment is on the line with us now. He's one of the CNN's top 10 heroes, Dr. Daniel Ivankovich, and talking about the things that he does on a regular basis. And he wants to let him know that even though he travels the world for some of the kind of bigger name disasters that you may see, and I'm sure a lot of smaller ones too, that there are things happening on the violent side and on the personal disaster side happening, you know, in certain areas of our city on a regular basis. And what I wanted to ask you, doctor, is that, so you know, you have people come from around the world to have you treat certain things that they can't get done where they are. So let's talk a little bit about some of the injuries. You mentioned spinal cord a couple times. You mentioned a little bit about the military type situations, and I'm sure you're dealing on the violent side with a lot of gunshot wounds. What are the kind of things that you're seeing and the ways that you're helping?
Well, you know, in my training, I was very fortunate. Northwestern Memorial Hospital was, I went to medical school at Northwestern, and my mentor for trauma and for spinal reconstruction, Dr. Paul Meyer, actually Colonel Dr. Paul Meyer, he opened the first spine trauma center in America after he served in the Vietnam War, and he saw, you know, how people in the field were being completely mismanaged. And in his mind, he said, we can do so much better. And he actually created a system for the triage, evaluation, and treatment of severe spinal cord injuries. And he formed the Midwest Regional Spinal Cord Injury Care System based out of Northwestern and the Rehab Institute of Chicago. So I had the opportunity to spend a year with him as his fellow. And we did hundreds of surgeries, took care of patients from all over the world. And it really, you know, one of the things that he took great pride in, I remember when I would be walking through the halls of the old Wesley Pavilion before they tore it down, where, you know, we'd be taking care of many of these kids that were shot, that were injured in the old Cabrini Green and, you know, from around the city. And he would look at me and he said, you know, Dan, don't spare a dime on these kids. Take care of them. Do whatever you need to do. Just do it right. And they've got one shot, and it's you to get back together. And those words were very profound and resonated with me. And I still keep in touch with him. He's going strong in his 80s. And, you know, he... very, very important guy for me. And he showed me many things that I use on a day to day to take care of patients. But, you know, the difficulty with the gang violence, you know, I need to say that it's very it's draining emotionally, because a big part of the thing that I do get angry with, I take care of many people who are just innocent victims. They didn't do this. It wasn't their fault. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time. But I really have pulled back a lot, because I got tired of seeing the same idiots back and back and back again. You know, they don't learn. And this is like a joke, and it's a game to them. And I got to the point in my career where I was thinking, why am I wasting my time taking care of people who don't care about themselves? And, you know, the people in the community that are not seen, that don't have a voice, that struggle with issues like arthritic joints. I mean, orthopedic disability is the number one cause of disability in adults under 65 and over 65. Walk into any airport and count how many people are on crutches, are on a walker, are in a wheelchair, or in a, you know, rolling cart. It's astounding. And you go into these neighborhoods to find a guy like me willing to offer services. It's non-existent. So I have waiting lists of, you know, a year to see me for, you know, hip replacements, for knee replacements, for, spinal surgery, for, you know, any of these elective things. And we do a lot of that because we provide great value to these communities, because in many instances, when, you know, you have a horrible arthritic joint, I mean, you're incapable of living your life and navigating in your community. And, you know, by treating them, we're keeping them active, we're keeping them in their community, we're saving. You know, the average nursing home, even if you're poor, I mean, they charge between $50,000 and $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
And for every person that we can treat to keep in their community, it means, you know, tremendous savings to the community, and just the dignity and the humanity of people being able to care for themselves. You can't even put a price tag on that.
Yeah.
That's really what we do.
It's so important. And although, like, the, you know, the area code can change, the address can change, the demographic can change, the situation can change, but medical care, I think, universally is expensive. And that's one thing that you've done. And I want to get a little insight into the One Patient Global Health Initiative. It's for people that don't have insurance. I mean, that's been, you know, a front page for a number of years now. So how do you do it? I mean, you understand that these people need it. Everybody needs it, but you're trying to help those people who can't get it otherwise.
Well, you know, it's a very difficult issue, because, you know, people think that with the Affordable Care Act, i.e. Obamacare, that the issue has been solved. Actually, for me, it's actually screwed up everything very, very significantly, because, you know, we talk about uninsured and we talk about underinsured. I get quoted a lot as saying Medicaid is a four-letter word for the medical community, because it's an insurance that many people have, but very few doctors accept. You know, as a specialist and subspecialist that does what I do and cares for Medicaid, I have patients that, you know, drive past 20 hospitals to see me. I get, you know, people from East St. Louis, from Rock Island, from Springfield, from Champaign, that have Medicaid, in addition to my people from Chicago. You know, there was a cover story in Crane Chicago Business they did during the affordable care debate. And it was just very entertaining because the average person that has made it to my office on average has been hung up on by 12 to 15 doctors in my specialty, in my profession. Wow. That the minute they say they have Medicaid, it's like click. And the problem is that, you know, even though Medicaid is quote unquote insurance, people have a card that says they have insurance, not everybody accepts it. In fact, very few. And where we got screwed was, you know, prior to the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid was very straightforward. I mean, you took it, it reimbursed you somewhere between 18 and 20 cents on the dollar. So, you know, we would do surgery, the hospitalization on a major spine surgery, the bill would be, you know, $150,000. The hospital would get paid 20, and I would get paid, you know, $1,500 instead of, you know, whatever the usual fee would be. And I said, look, I'm fine with that. I've accepted that. But now with the Affordable Care Act, my reimbursements for Medicaid have been cut anywhere from 20 to 50%. And I think, wow. You know, it's not like they're creating more money. What they're doing is creating more people that are in this sandbox trying to play. And the insurance companies are skimming off their 10 to 20. They're not providing more care. So it's made things very, very challenging. And we've had to look at other resources. You know, one of the big projects we're going to be undertaking in Chicago over the next couple of years is to develop a freestanding facility that focuses on diabetes, that focuses on obesity, and focuses on orthopedic disorders. And the point is, if you can sort of get where I'm going, is that I'm not reacting to the problem. I'm trying to get ahead of the problem,
right,
and actually prevent it. Many of the orthopedic issues are due to obesity, which is a epidemic in our cities, especially among the poor. Physical education is being cut in schools. Kids are obese at rates that are at record levels. I think adults can't get physical therapy. They can't get conditioning. And so, you know, they continue to go down this sort of slippery slope where they become less and less functional due to weight, due to diabetes, due to health issues. And we're going to try and reach out more to the private sector for much of the funding and building the facility because, you know, the crazy thing, you know, if you really think about it, is that Chicago is bankrupt, Cook County is bankrupt, and the state of Illinois is the worst state in America in terms of financial insolvency. So
yes.
It's very, very hard to do what we do. I mean, I'm committed to doing it, but it's, you know, we're going to need to reach out and partner with people that dig where my vision is going and what we are trying to do at One Patient and say that, you know what, this guy Ivankovich is out of his mind, but he's doing great work. And he's got a vision for how to do this, how to do it in a very efficient way, to do it in a fiscally responsible way, and to actually deliver the work instead of, you know, doing craziness. I mean, there's so many programs in these communities getting millions of dollars that do nothing for the communities, but take that money and put it in their friends' pockets. And welcome to Chicago and corruption. I mean, I don't dwell on that too much and focus on the negative, but we literally are in the most corrupt state and city in America. We're like a laughing stock for how we mismanage these funds and how, and a trickle down, the patients are injured and harmed because of it. So, you know, it's a major objective. And, you know, a lot of people are watching from the outside, seeing, you know, how this plays out.
Yep. And we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to find out how people can support, participate, get involved, and make a difference with the One Patient Global Health Initiative and Dr. Dan Ivankovich. Because, you know, part of that whole, you know, getting some of the attention and part of some of the high profile things that you've done is you are able to inspire not only, and you mentioned it, some of the younger people getting into the medical community to follow in your footsteps and see value in what it is that you do. But also, like you said, private sector, people are going to be inspired to be able to help out. They're out there, and now you do have truly that platform to do it. To do that, and then also to entertain. We're going to talk about about the music when we come back as well. It is Dr. Dan Ivankovich. He is on with us on WGN. It is 720 WGN.
When times are hard, baby, and I ain't got no job, please, please don't leave me.
Nice. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in on a Saturday morning, one of the first Saturday mornings, what's the first one, really, of 2016 in January, a year that is going to have some great things happen, and we know that some of those great things are going to be perpetrated. They're going to be done by the one and only Dr. Dan Ivankovich. He is on the line with us now. Doctor, before we get into the music, I want to talk about the music that you just came off stage a little bit earlier this evening. But let's give out the information and the website and how people can get a hold of all of everything that's going on at One Patient Global Health Initiative.
Well, yeah, I mean, the easiest way is just go to One Patient, onepatient.org. And you can reach us through there. We're also on Facebook. We're on Twitter. You can donate directly through the website. We just had really an incredible campaign. Part of the awareness of the CNN heroes was they also did a major fundraiser on behalf of all 10 of the heroes. And that translates into, you know, real meaningful, you know, impactful revenue. You know, we had people, you know, from all over the world donating $5, $10, $20, $50. You know, we have a PayPal link on our website, but we had several people that donated $5, $10,000 to the cause. And, wow. And Subaru, who, incredible, they matched dollar for dollar all the donations. So, you know, for us, we're going to be able to do much more in terms of, you know, promoting the vision and cause due to, you know, help. If people, you don't need to be a doctor, just being able to reach out and, you know, instead of, you know, buying that extra pack of cigarettes, you know, $10, $15, $20, it makes a huge difference. And you can do that right through our website.
Oh, that's excellent. And the website again, one more time.
One Patient, onepatient.org.
OnePatient.org. Now you wonder when you'll have time for anything else but doing some of the things that that you've done on the medical side. 600 surgeries per year, 100,000 people have benefited from the program. And you have so many fans because of CNN and, of course, all the work that you've done around the world. So many fans for everything that you do on the medical side. But you also, you know, it does not define you, just the medical side, even though it's maybe what you're more known for. But you're also out there. And you've got fans on the music side too. So let's talk about it. You were just where were you at House of Blues? Where were you playing a concert tonight?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things that's really incredible is that, you know, Chicago really is. It is the premier. It is the destination for Chicago blues music. And since I've been a kid, I have been completely, you know, absorbed in this. I had a chance to really to play and to meet and to be mentored by many legendary, iconic, you know, blues musicians that literally I could reach out and touch them. I mean, they were stars, they were celebrities, they sold millions of records, but, you know, many of them were literally listed in the phone book. I mean, as a kid growing up, you know, I met Muddy Waters at the old Chicago Fest on the Navy Pier. Stage before they renovated it and made it a big tourist, you know, attraction. But, you know, I got to meet Muddy. You know, he lived in Westmont. He lived in a very humble home in Westmont. I mean, you could go over there and visit him. And as a kid, one of the real crazy intersections between medicine and music for me, I worked, you know, both. I went to the undergrad Northwestern campus in downtown. A gentleman who recently passed was the director of the animal laboratories. And I remember, you know, one night cranking Freddie King in one of the labs, and he walked in, he goes, who's playing Freddie King? And I'm like, that would be me. And he said, you like blues? I go, damn right. I like blues. I mean, I'm a veteran of the old Maxwell Street and everything. And he goes, well, if you love blues, he goes, do you play? I go, yeah, I'm a guitar player. He goes, I want you to come to my club. I'm like, old man, shut up. You do not own a blues club. And he goes, I want you to come to the South Side on 43rd Street. I am one of the owners of the Checkerboard Lounge. And I'm like, nice. Get out of here, dude. You are not. He wanted me to come on a Monday. And I said, I'll come on that Monday because I want to go to the checkerboard, but you're not going to be there. And you're just, you know, talking some smack, and I don't believe a damn thing you're telling me. And sure enough, I show up on a Monday, and I walk in the door, and there were like six people in the club. But sitting at the bar, buddy guy who I didn't know but was his partner in the checkerboard lounge, buddy guy, Junior Wells, Magic Slim, Lefty Diz, Johnny Dollar, and my partner in my band, the Chicago Blues All-Stars, Mr. Killer Ray Allison. And these guys were sitting there, and who's behind the bar pouring them all cognac? Mr. L.C. Thurman, who was also the director of the animal labs at Northwestern. And was really a completely, you know, I didn't realize then, but when I tell the story to people, they're like, get out of here, dude. And I mean, it was just amazing. I mean, I had the opportunity to be mentored and to just be friends and drinking buddies with some of the most influential blues musicians ever. And as you look back, they were very, very critical for me because, you know, this is what gave me sort of the credibility, being a basketball player, being a musician. It actually gave me a reason to be in these communities of Chicago. I didn't look at them as the jungle back then. I just looked at, this is where I go to play basketball. It's where I go to play music. And I've always been very accepted by those communities in which, you know, I participated because I was one of them. I became part of the problem to become part of the solution. And I'm very proud of, you know, the CNN accolade, but, you know, my band, the Chicago Blues All-Stars, this past year was inducted into the Chicago Blues Hall of Fame.
Wow.
And, you know, and we've been friends for 30 years. And, you know, I'm just kind of the baby, you know, in the band. The band has collectively, you know, played on over 300, you know, recordings. I mean, really incredible people who I call my friends. And, you know, it's been a really great journey. And, you know, we play, you know, I don't get to play on all the shows, but the band plays anywhere from 6 to 8 times a month. And they rotate primarily at, you know, the larger, you know, blues venues like Buddy Guy's Legends, the Kingston Mines, and, you know, House of Blues has been really, really good to us as well. And it's just amazing because for Chicago, what has happened in this last decade now, in those venues, at any given night when we play, 80% of the people that are there to see the music are from out of town or out of the country. So Chicago is really a destination. People come here, you know, blues is a reason why the tourists come here. They come here to see blues, and it's a joy and it's a pleasure to be able to sort of be a disciple that is keeping this music going. And it's a very rich history. I mean, Chicago, if you look back, you know, for the past century, it's just been an amazing intersection where African Americans came from Arkansas, from the Mississippi Delta, brought their fantastic culture and music here. And then Muddy Waters got this brilliant idea to plug a guitar into an amplifier, and he literally, with that one gesture, changed the course of musical history.
Wow. Well, I mean, Dr. Dan Ivankovich, he is with the Chicago Blues All-Stars. He is sharing some of the greatest things that Chicago is known for with its blues music, and then also helping to deal with some of the challenges that Chicago is also known for with the One Patient Global Health Initiative. Before we let you go, and it's going to be a second because we're late for news, but Dr. Dan, how can people get a hold of all the stuff as far as the music and follow you with the Chicago Blues All-Stars?
You know, it's crazy. We have actually, you know, I've got, I think, about 60,000 Twitter followers and about, you know, 10 or 15,000 people following me on Facebook. The Chicago Blues All-Stars, I think we've got over 120,000 Twitter followers. And on Facebook, we're up about 60 or 70,000. So blues music is certainly important. You can catch us at ChicagoBluesAllStars.com. And my handle on stage is Chicago Slim. You can catch me at chicagoslim.com, and it's amazing stuff, and, you know, can't wait to see you at a show, and look for us in town. It's always a blast to have people come up and let us know that they're fans of the music.
Honored to have you on WGN. Honored to have you show have you on the show. And honored to have you as one of our great Chicagoans, kind of holding that torch for all things that are good about people in general. And congratulations on the CNN honor and Happy New Year, man.
Oh, thank you. You know, to everyone, to you, to the staff, to the listeners. Truly, it's a infinite hope at the beginning of the year. I am wishing nothing but health, happiness, and love to everybody in this 2016. Thank you for all your positives and peace and love.
Back at you. And of course, thank you, Dr. Dan Ivankovich. And this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It is 5 a.m. Here's Roger Badish.